Thank you all for coming on a Wednesday night. So we're going to discuss this verse from Bhagavad Gita, 2:54. It's a nice verse. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Arjuna Uvacha. Stitta pragyasya ka bhasa samadhistasya keshava stitta di kim prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta
kim
Arjuna uvacha Stitta pragyasya ka bhasha samadhistasya keshava stitta di kim prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta
kim
Arjuna uvacha
Arjuna
said,
Stitta
pragyasa of one who is situated, in fixed Krishna consciousness. Ha, what? Bhasha, language. Samadhi stasya of one situated in trance. Keshava, O Krishna, Stitta Dhi, one fixed in Krishna consciousness. Kim, what? Prabhasheta, speaks. Kim, how? Asita,
does remain still.
Vrajeta, walks. Kim, how? Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak? And what is his language? How does he sit? And how does he walk? He walks right towards the door, following the Vrindavan. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As there are symptoms for each and every man in terms of his particular situation simultaneously, one who is Krishna conscious has his particular nature, talking, walking, thinking, feeling, etc. As a rich man has his symptoms by which he is known as a rich man. As a diseased man has his symptoms by which he is known as diseased. Or as a learned man has his symptoms, so a man in transcendental consciousness of Krishna has specific symptoms in various dealings. One can know his specific symptoms from the Bhagavad Gita. Most important is how the man in Krishna consciousness speaks, for speech is the most important quality of any man. It is said that a fool is undiscovered as long as he does not speak, and certainly a well-dressed fool cannot be identified unless he speaks. But as soon as he speaks, he reveals himself at once. The immediate symptom of a Krishna conscious man is that he speaks only of Krishna and of matters relating to him are the symptoms that automatically follow, as stated below. Stitta pragyasya ka bhasha samadhi stasya keshava stitta di kim prabhasheta kim asita Prajita Kim? Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk? So, this verse 54, little context here. Verse 54 of chapter 2 is in the third section of chapter 2. The first section of chapter 2 is a continuation of setting the scene from chapter 1, the battlefield, Arjuna's uncertainty about what he should do, his views on morality, his feeling confused, and then in the beginning, so up to the point where Arjuna submits to Krishna. I don't really know. Can you instruct me? That's the first part. Then the second part of Bhagavad Gita is Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga is an analysis of matter and spirit. Before discussing what you should do, first Krishna says, I'm going to establish who you are. You're a spirit, you're not matter. So duties should be understood in terms of spirit, not simply in terms of matter. The duties are to pursue self-realization. So then the third section, which this verse falls in, is Krishna says, now they describe Sankhya, I'm going to describe Buddhi Yoga. So this is the Buddhi Yoga section. Buddhi means spiritual intelligence. It's distinguished from material intelligence. Material intelligence is the faculty that assists in sense gratification, in discerning how to move matter in such a way you can get what you want, and what you want is sense gratification. That's material intelligence. And spiritual intelligence flows from Sankhya, understanding spirit, and fixed consciousness upon the supreme goal of life and the supreme personality of Godhead if you're a devotee, and the supreme Brahman if you're not, but the supreme, fixed. And then activities flow from that. So, Krishna has made some earlier statements before this verse 54, where he's comparing and contrasting. Material intelligence looks like this. Spiritual intelligence looks like that. Spiritual intelligence is where, Buddhi Yoga is where the aim is one. And everything follows the one. And material intelligence is many-branched. Bahusha kahinantascha. Mudhayobhyavasayinam. And then Krishna describes, following from that, a very important understanding. How to, karmani evadikaraste mapalesha kadachina, that important verse from chapter 2, verse 47. I gave a Sunday feast lecture in Seattle on this verse because there was a man that came to the first part of the seminar, and he came because he has a friend on the East Coast that they work, they're colleagues, they're with the same company and they work, you know, close together. And he said, I've been studying this verse every day for 6 months and I don't understand the verse. So could you explain the verse? Just discuss the verse sometime while you're here. So the verse is saying, many of you know the verse, it's one do and three do nots. The one do is perform your prescribed duty. The word that's used in the verse is adhikar. means qualification. Arjuna, you have the qualification to perform your duty. And you don't have entitlement to the fruit of the performance of that duty. Nor should you consider yourself to be the cause of the fruits of your duty. Nor should you be attached to not performing your duty. Do not endure. So, but to accomplish those things, one has to be situated in transcendence. It's good to be in the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, like a characteristic of the mode of goodness is performing your duty. You do things because they're to be done. It's duty. Our acharyas are commenting, it's actually attachment to the duty, and the attachment to the duty because the duty connects you with the Supreme. It's attachment to the Supreme. It's karma yoga or Buddha yoga. It's connection with the Supreme, not just connection with some configuration of the material energy called yours. It's my duty, so I do my duty. Be not then the knots. Don't become attached on the material side to the results or thinking of yourself as the cause of the results or non-performance of duty. And there's a very similar verse, not exactly the same, but very close, mirroring this verse in the fifth chapter, where Krishna says a similar thing, Nakartritvam Nakarmani Lokasya Srijate Prabhu. Do not consider yourself to be the cause of action. Do not consider yourself to be the cause of the results of action. And do not consider yourself as being the cause of other people doing actions. Understand that all this is being carried out by material nature. Now, Bhagavad Gita is teaching transcendence. Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. We're hearing transcendental knowledge. We're not hearing how to get a job or, you know, how to, you know, learn something and get an A in your exam. We're learning transcendental knowledge. It's not the other kind. How to be situated in transcendence. How to be situated free from the modes of nature, free from the bondage of karma, free from the cycle of birth and death. Freedom, the real kind, not the other kind. So there's some standards to be fixed in this activity, this kind of work. There has to be buddhi, there has to be spiritual intelligence that's guiding your work. Those verses in between the 247 and this one, they're elaborating on that. Detached from matter and attached to the self and the activities of the self. Even we're in a material body that has modes of nature that are influencing it. The word in Sanskrit is swabhava. Swa means one's own, and bhava means nature. Well, according to my contact with the modes, I have a swabhava. So, Brahmana swabhava, Kshatriya swabhava, Vaishya swabhava, Shudra swabhava, and born from that swabhava, then there's activity born from swabhava. But swabhava is animated by the soul. So throughout the whole execution of duty, Bhagavad Gita is teaching, keep your consciousness, please, I'm the soul. And the soul's connection with the Supreme Soul, that makes it yoga. Perform your prescribed duty. You're born of your swabhava. But don't be attached to the fruits that's coming from material nature. It's not yours. Nor consider yourself to be the cause of the fruits, because material nature is producing that under Krishna's direction. and don't be attached to non-performance of duty, Arjuna, because that's what he was thinking. That was his arguments in the first chapter. I don't want to do this. I'm out of here. That's Krishna saying, because that will implicate you in bondage, in sinful reaction, sinful bondage. And the other, not only it's the mode of goodness to do your duty, but if it's done in the consciousness attached to the Supreme, then there's no bondage. It's karma-free activity. It's at the preliminary, at least, of karma-free activity. So, going through those verses of detachment from duality and attachment to spirit, or to the Supreme, now comes this verse, where Arjuna is asking Keshava, Krishna, please describe these three things. What are the symptoms? Like, if I bump into someone who's situated in transcendence, how will I know? What's the litmus test? What's the standard by which I can know? And, there are several such sections. This is coming in the second chapter, so it's real early. But again, there's several such sections where Arjuna is asking, Krishna is describing, what's the nature of a transcendentalist? 14th chapter is another example, modes of nature. At the end, Krishna says, without exception, everyone is involved in modes of nature, except some rare few persons, they're free from the modes of nature. So Arjuna naturally asks the question, what are the symptoms of one who's free from the modes of nature? And most importantly, how'd they get there? Because I'd like to get there, become free from the modes of nature. And there's other places. So there's not a paucity of explanation of what transcendental is. But here specifically, he's asking, what does it look like? And he's asking in three categories. He's asking in terms of, the person is stitta pragya, then down below stitta dhi. The I has a line over it. Stitta dhi and stitta pragya. And similarly, samadhi stasya, situated in samadhi, situated in dhi. Dhi literally means intelligence or wisdom. And one who has, based upon having intelligence or wisdom, one situated in knowledge, stitta pragya. So Prabhupada just made it really easy for us. He said, one who's merged in Krishna consciousness, one whose consciousness is merged in transcendence, or the word for word, stitta pragya, fixed in Krishna consciousness, stitta di, fixed in Krishna consciousness, fixed in Krishna consciousness, squeaky clean, fixed in Krishna consciousness. And what are his symptoms? And then in three categories, how does he speak? How does he sit? How does he walk? Speech, sitting, walking. So in his commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has unpacked it a little bit. He's saying that what Arjuna is asking is one whose consciousness, samadhi stasya, one whose consciousness is merged in transcendence, how does he speak? So how does he conduct his life? What's the nature of this person? And the nature of the person is, this is like a preview of the answer, but they have no material affinity. Affinity is a nice word. Like iron filings in a magnet. There's no affinity. There's no magnetic attraction for the natural attraction for something of this world. They have no affinity at all. Like sawdust and iron in a magnet. No, nothing happens. You can bring material nature near this stitta pragya and nothing happens. No affinity at all. Specifically, even in terms of the shape of the material energy that looks like distress or looks like happiness, they're completely detached. The Bhagavatam takes the same message and puts it in the postgraduate language, but it's the same message. Like King Chitraketu, that he's appreciated by Lord Shiva, where he sees equally apituliyarta darshanam. Darshanam. He sees equally liberation, heaven, or hell. This is spoken by Lord Shiva just after Parvati, his consort, has cursed King Chitraketu to become a demon. And he's totally unaffected. It's like someone telling another person, go to hell. And somehow they have the power, just by saying it, the person goes to hell. And the person who hears them and knows they're going to hell, they're unaffected. Or someone says to you, guess what? Tomorrow, you're going to Vaikuntha. Or tomorrow, you're going to attain a heavenly destination. Tomorrow. And your mind is unaffected. Apituliyarta darshanam. And how is that possible? The first part of the verse, King Chitraketu is appreciated by Lord Shiva, is Narayana Parayana. Narayana Paraksarge Nakuchaschana Bibhute. They're detached from duality because they're attached to the Supreme. That's what self-realization is. It's not just tapasya, being an austere person that no matter how cold it is, you don't shiver. No matter how hot it is, you don't perspire. You're like a stone. You don't feel anything. That's not the meaning. But you're certainly aware, King Chitraketu was aware what Parvati had said, and he knew that it was going to happen. He didn't plead with her, oh, Mother Parvati, you've misunderstood. Please change this utterance, because she had the power to change the utterance. He could have petitioned her. But he accepted somehow there's a plan of the Supreme, and so be it. With folded hands, he came before her and explained, I didn't intend any criticism of Lord Shiva. I was honoring him, that only someone of his caliber can be totally removed from any kind of material attraction. I was appreciating the quality of Lord Shiva. You've misunderstood, that's okay. I accept. So be it. Circumambulated her three times and got back on his vimana and took off, and sure enough, shortly thereafter, his soul moved from King Chitraketu to a demon, Vritrasura. But back to the Bhagavad Gita verse, a stitta pragya fixed in Krishna consciousness, or samadhi stasya, fixed in transcendence, they're indifferent to things that are of this temporal world, the world of duality. The configurations of duality can be whatever they are, that's okay. Even they may look like, oh, this is a happy situation. Oh, this is a distressful situation. I'll just share this anecdotal thing. coming back from India, not so long ago, I was in Mayapur conducting a yatra, and I had planned that I would spend one day in Bombay, just at Juhu Temple, because I knew that Brajahari would let me just be peaceful and just like... And then got on a plane coming back to America from Bombay. And it was a flight through Germany and then the flight from Germany to Chicago. And we're zoom, zoom, zooming along and all of a sudden there's this loud kaboom! It was two sounds, not just boom. Kaboom! And the whole plane shook and wondered, what's that? And, you know, we just carried on. So 15 minutes later, the pilot said, the engine on the right wing just exploded. And we're running on one engine. And we're going to make a landing in Gander, Newfoundland. We're about an hour and a half over the ocean before we come to Gander, Newfoundland. And everyone's getting out the map and looking on the, you know, the tracking thing that says we went from 35,000 feet to 20,000 feet and instead of 550 miles an hour, we're putt-putting along at half of that and kind of coasting into Gander International Airport. And you can imagine, you know, the people, fortunately it was people from Germany, mostly. And, you know, they're like staunch. But, you know, but some people were panicking and nobody was screaming yet. But, you know, there was tension in the air. And then the pilot came on again and said, it seems that everything is going along okay. So at this point, we're not going to have any emergency procedures in landing. Like that was supposed to reassure everybody, and I think it just served to agitate the minds of everybody. You know, we're now 45 minutes from land, and you know, we're going to land in Gander, Newfoundland. You ever heard of that place? As we're flying into Gander, Newfoundland, you know, looking for the city underneath with all the lights. There was no city underneath. It was trees and swamps, and it wasn't snow. I was very surprised. We're that far north. Like, you know, from the Arctic Circle, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from Iceland and Greenland. Anyway, so, you know, this wasn't what we had planned when we got on the plane. It wasn't what they had planned either. And so it's an unexpected event. And, you know, frankly, it could have been fatal. It was dangerous. It worked out. The one engine putt-putted us into Gander, Newfoundland. And when we landed, they said, okay, we're going to have to go through Canadian customs and make sure you bring your passport and your documents with you. We're going to leave the luggage on the plane. And hopefully we'll be able to leave sometime tomorrow. And you can imagine, you know, this little hubbub. It worked out. We got on the plane the next day. They flew a plane in from some other place. So there's two planes on the runway and, you know, one with a blown engine and one with two engines that worked. And we got on the plane. They transferred our luggage to the other plane and flew off to Chicago. Worked out. But in between, there was all this anxiety and so on. So how does one stay undisturbed when there's cause for disturbance? Another term is dhira. Dhira is tatra namuyati. Dhira means one who remains undisturbed. Similarly, stitta pragya, one whose intelligence is fixed, literally, but Prabhupada is, how do you keep fixed intelligence? Well, stitta d, you have your d, you have realization, you have wisdom, those are the literal meanings, you have full shelter in Krishna. And that's the shelter, that's the support, that's the source of confidence and the sense of safety and the wisdom-giving personality that even you may not know what's going to happen next, you're safe. because you're in Krishna's hand. One of the persons was saying, just going on with the anecdote a little bit, one of the persons was saying, this happened, a much older man, American man, said he was flying over the Rocky Mountains, going in the westerly direction, and same thing happened, only not just there was a kaboom, but the engine caught fire on the right wing. And fortunately, he said, they have this system where it's fire suppressant, and it put the fire out, and the engine dropped off of the wing somewhere in the mountains. And later he spoke to the pilot, and the pilot says, a good thing we had that fire suppressant system, because the wing would have melted and then we would have been finished. And then there was another conversation that said, I think we got there safely because we had some kind of a saintly person with us on the airplane. God protected us, because they were saying like that. I mean, I didn't give that. Thank God we had a godly person with us. What's for dinner? Hare Krishna. I won't tell you what was for dinner. So then how does the person speak? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, how is the intelligence, the stitta D, how is the intelligence affected by the words and actions of others when others show this, that, or the other? They show affection, they show anger, or they show neutrality. How does he respond? Because the respond is by speech. How is the mind moved by the actions of others? What's his own internal quality? How is he affected by the actions of others? And the answer that's going to come up is in the upcoming verses is, because he's fixed in transcendence, because he's fixed upon Krishna, whether someone is showing anger, or someone is showing affection, or someone is neutral, inside, they respond, but inside, the shelter is with Krishna. So they're unchanged. Vikara is the Sanskrit word. There's not a transformation of material nature. One doesn't become elated and sad. One isn't moved. So supposing somebody has a tendency to become elated or sad, or maybe too much sad or something like that, become situated. The solution is not fix the problem out there, it's fix the problem in here. Fix the problem in here means become situated in Krishna consciousness. And what does that mean is described earlier in the chapter. Now Arjuna is asking for symptoms. Not how to, but what are the symptoms? How to is discussed earlier, it's also discussed so many places in Bhagavad Gita, but again in that 14th chapter Arjuna asks, how does one become situated beyond the modes of nature? And then, how does he sit? Means, when they're in the position of restraining their senses, what's going on inside? What are they feeling? What is the consciousness inside as they're restraining their senses? And the verses that follow give the tortoise example. When there's service, the senses are extended, like the tortoise can withdraw the senses. There's no service here. Like a classic example of that from the Bhagavatam is when Vidura leaves the royal palace because he was trying to do some service, and it became clear to him he had no service. So he left. I mean, there was an issue where Duryodhana insulted him, but he didn't leave because, oh, you've insulted me, I'm leaving. He understood there's not any service for me. So he went to find some service. And the other verse that follows, how does one sit, is the higher taste verse, Param Drishtva Navartate. They're situated where they're experiencing a higher taste. That's what it's like. Internally, they have a higher taste. Now, back to how Prabhupada has drawn the purport, he's saying of these different things, how you sit, like what's going on when you're controlling your senses, how do you walk, how do you perform your duties as you're moving about the world, how do you speak? Of them, speech is most important. The immediate symptom of a Krishna conscious man is that he speaks only of Krishna and matters related to him. Other symptoms then automatically follow, as stated below. So I'm going to take a few minutes and emphasize something, and that is same point as what Prabhupada is speaking here about the use of speech, or in a little broader sense, the use of time. So last time I was here, we had some discussion on the six items that enhance bhakti and the six items that destroy bhakti. Remember that? Shadbir bhaktir vinashati, shadbir bhaktir prasidhyati. And one of the items that we ended up having some lively discussion about was the prajalpa item. And prajalpa is specifically speech. Casual speech, you know, the blah, blah, blah. Prajalpa doesn't necessarily mean fault finding. You know, the latest gossip. Did you hear this one? Psst, 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 psst. That's also prajalpa. But it's not just that kind of thing. He did it to him, and she did it to her, and they did this thing, and yada, yada, yada. Just speech that's not elevating. Purposefully elevating. Just, you know, conventional things certainly are appropriate, like, how are you today? How is your health? How are the kids? And, you know, things like that. That's fine. But the purpose behind such questions, and in the language of Bhagavad Gita and the language of Rupa Goswami's teachings, is with the purpose of seeing how the interest of Krishna is being carried out. Is there something that, some assistance that can come to help the service of Krishna being carried out more nicely? There's one verse from Ramayana that Prabhupada, I heard him quote maybe 50, 60 times. And it's when Vishvamitra Muni comes to the palace of Dasarath, and there's an immediate exchange between them, respectful exchange, and Dasarath is asking Vishvamitra Muni, how is your pursuit of perfection? How is it faring? Or, and say maybe more close to our language is, how is your sadhana? Or sometimes it's said, how is your bhajan? How are you connecting with Krishna? It's like, you know, how's it going? There's the, you know, the conventional, people ask me sometimes, is everything all right, Maharaj? And they just say, expense. Is everything all right? Is everything going okay? Well, you know, the material world is a dark place, but it's under Krishna's control, so everything's okay, in an ultimate sense. But just specifically, for a devotee, the power of speech should be purposely elevating, certainly discussing the well-being of one another out of concern of their well-being. Like, you know, we have a couple people here that have some real serious medical things, so we may ask them, how's it going with your health? But, you know, persons that have a health problem know perfectly well, it gets to be like too much. It just, you know, have a repetitive discussion about how my health is going. well, my body is falling apart, to be frank. Or like in the, you know, was in the hospital about a year ago, year and a half ago, and you know, the attendant came in and said, "How are you feeling?" I said, "Look at that, I got all these tubes in me. What do you think?" Said, "Oh, don't be depressed." I said, "Get out of here, you know." "I'm not speaking depression, I'm speaking reality." I said, "No, I know patients like you that they get very depressed when they got, you know, take a hike, man." "Go chant Hare Krishna, will you? You didn't go to Mangalarti this morning. You don't know what you're talking about." To say, "Oh, everything's great," you know, not everything's great in terms of the body. But so where does our consciousness go when we're engaged in conversation? And I shared this with the devotees in Seattle similarly, because we had this really nice seminar, and the common question at the end, "This has been so enlivening, Maharaj, we've learned so many things. How do we stay, you know, in this consciousness instead of go back down to the other consciousness?" You know that one. So one of the things that brings consciousness down again is prajalpa. It's hasti snan, the bathing of an elephant, or the same phrase, same meaning in a different phrase, is kunjara sochavat, right from the Bhagavatam. Like an elephant taking a bath. Takes a nice bath, goes to the edge of the lake, river, whatever, grabs a bunch of dust and throws it with his trunk all over his body. And we achieve the same thing. If we take up the activities of Krishna consciousness and then following them, we engage in prajalpa, just allowing our speech to deteriorate to something that's not elevating, not necessarily something bad, nasty, vicious, or degraded, just useless, senseless, mindless. Rather, for our benefit and the benefit in service to the others that we associate with, our consciousness should be, ideally, purposely elevating. In consciousness, think of the soul and the well-being of the soul and the interest of the soul, and how can that be fulfilled? How can that be enhanced? And if that's something that we're carrying inside, it's something that comes out in our speech, is the point that Prabhupada is making. And from that coming out in your speech, all the other things follow naturally. Consciousness becomes elevated by sound vibration, and conversely, consciousness becomes degraded by sound vibration. And in that same category, I'm sure you recall, those that were here, of the in the prajalpa category, it's just frivolous time-wasting things. Some are nodding your heads. "Yes, I remember that discussion, Maharaj. Frivolous time-wasting things." And we had some, you know, nice lists. There are things that kids do. There are things that young adults do. There are things that adults do. There's things that we all share. And, you know, the internet is commonly one of the time-wasting things. And there are different ways to waste time on the internet. And you all know what they are. We each may have our little kind of nook and corner that when we're just, you know, to numb our mind out a little bit, we go and do that mind-numbing thing. And it's a waste of time. It covers our consciousness. It keeps us from here. This is transcendence. This verse is Krishna's explaining, or being asked to explain, rather, what are the symptoms? And I summarize the symptoms is there's no affinity for duality. So we're not there. We have some affinity for duality. We like this kind and we don't like that kind. So the transcendentalist practices the principle of extending consciousness into the realm of transcendence. And sound vibration is such an important one. So we have our minimum prescribed chanting of japa. And, you know, we should also regularly be hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. And if you do like that, here's what will happen. Several things will happen. You'll carry thoughts of Krishna. And when you're with other devotees, you'll share those topics about Krishna. I was fortunate enough to be able to take prasadam today with Chakri, and we had some nice discussions about, you know, realizations from the scriptures and our experience in Krishna consciousness, you know, what the journey of reaching Krishna is. It was a very nice discussion. Very, very, very satisfying, very pleasing, uplifting. And conversation could go into some other things. So you get the idea. Not just be a stoic and be stern and, you know, button your lip and don't talk nonsense and those kind of things. But speak about Krishna. Hear and chant nicely, and then you share those things that you read and things that you heard, and nice transcendental exchange uplifts consciousness. I'll just end with this. Many of you have seen Your Ever Well Wisher, and there's that interview with Prabhupada with the family that he stayed with in Butler, Pennsylvania, and Sally Agarwal describing her experience with Prabhupada. And after some time, she came through St. Louis because her son, Bridge, now lives in St. Louis somewhere, right? Rupa? You met her?
No, I didn't know about her.
Sally Agarwal and her husband came through St. Louis to go visit Bridge Agarwal. And she was saying the same thing, you know, so many years later. He was such a nice man. You know, she wasn't a transcendentalist, she isn't, but she had appreciation that he could speak about anything. And he never made us feel uncomfortable, because he was just, you know, he was perfectly fine. But he had this way that whatever topic, he'd soon be speaking something about Krishna. And in preparing for the Mayapur Yatra and the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there was one contemporary scholar that Bhaktivinoda Thakur spent 4 straight days with, because he was writing a novel about Krishna's pastimes that was totally speculative. And without sleeping and eating, he spent 4 days with this scholarly man who in the end accepted everything that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, and he rewrote his book based upon Bhaktivinoda Thakur's interactions with him. And later he described that any time being with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in a matter of moments, he was speaking about whoever he was with, because it was, you know, sometimes he was the third person when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was with somebody else primarily, and immediately be speaking about Achintya Veda Beda Tattva. That's like, you know, that's philosophy. It's not like dinner table conversation. But he was the transcendentalist, and he wanted to give, or, you know, who is Lord Chaitanya? Something. The importance of the holy name, just with people that he would spend time with. And because he was such an awesome personality of stature, when he spoke, people would listen. So, but his life was unlimitedly, in different ways, giving Krishna conscious association to others. We're not Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We're like these little people. Little people. But the principle is something that we can adhere to be part of the solution to the problem of this degrading age of Kali, and be an agent, one of a collective many, to help elevate the collective consciousness of the people around us, at least those persons who we're immediately in contact with, and then those persons are in contact with other persons, and so on. Just like this little stop in Gander, Newfoundland, there were some exchanges with some people that otherwise it wouldn't have happened if we hadn't stopped in Gander, Newfoundland. And I know from the nature of the exchange, you know, had to sit down at the same table with some other people, and it's just, you know, may I? Yeah, sure. And then first there was this, you know, who's this Martian sitting at our table? And then, you know, that went down a little bit, and just, you know, a little relaxed kind of exchange. And then some curiosity questions. You know, are you a Buddhist monk? And those, and I, no, I'm a Krishna monk. Oh, what does that mean? And then, you know, a little discussion, and, you know, are you vegetarian? Well, of course, see. And then, you know, it's other things. So those exchanges, I can imagine, when they get to where they're going, then they say, you know, we had this stop in Gander, Newfoundland, and they're going to say, guess what? I sat with a Krishna monk, and we talked about these things, and, you know, whatever was their impression is something that's going to be shared. And I gave a few books and like that. So wherever we are, we will be having some kind of neutral, elevating, or the opposite kind of effect. And collectively, if we're acting in this way that's being described here, speaking about Krishna somehow, even simple, doesn't have to be, you know, a lecture, Bhagavatam discourse, just something to remind people about Krishna, something, then that's going to be good for us. It's going to be good for others. It'll help us move to this position of transcendence where the features of duality are affecting us less and less and less. And then transcendence, on the path of transcendence, on the path of self-realization. Looking at my watch, it's late, I'm going to end. So, any comments or questions? Yes?
So, like the difference between spiritual intelligence and material intelligence, material intelligence would be like cosine equals adjacent over hypotenuse.
That's one. And then the application of it is, you know, how I can put something out there in the marketplace and make a living.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, can't Facebook be cool sometimes?
Yeah. Anything can be cool sometimes. Most of the time, it's not cool.
I mean, not cool, but if you have pastimes of Krishna on there,
sure. That's cool. That's cool. And then, you know, lots of things happen besides pastimes of Krishna on Facebook. Something else. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.